Welcome to the Follow Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:07 British Summer Time. Today is April 30th, and today being Friday, of course, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And of course, the main headline that has really motivated investors over the last week has been the Greek debt crisis. And yields at one point this week hit over 11% and are closing out the week just below 9%. The fear of contagion also saw the yield on the Irish 10-year and the Portuguese 10-year also surge. And CDS spreads, and we have sovereign, we have a large number of sovereign CDS spreads in the chart library. I would suggest taking a look at them. Suggest that the risk premium on European debt generally has increased, but of course it has increased most on those peripheral Eurozone countries. That had a knock-on effect for related stock markets, and the Greek, Portuguese, Spanish markets pulled back really very sharply over the last week, and they found support having become really quite overextended. And rallied a little bit into the end of the week, but still remain under pressure. And today's rather negative action on the European markets suggests that we're not out of the woods here just yet. There is a developing performance gap between some of these European indices and Wall Street, because while the southern European indices have really been underperformers, they have dragged down the performance of a broader measure like the Stoxx 50 or indeed the Stoxx 600. The Stoxx 50 went back and tested its 200-day moving average this week, whereas the S&P remains within 9 points of the 1200-point level, and although down 1.3% today and offsetting yesterday's positive advance. It remains within close proximity of its recovery highs, and the probably the worst case scenario for Wall Street remains the potential for a pullback to test the ascending 200-day moving average. In other words, a mean reversion and unwind the overbought condition that has developed, particularly since February, when the last mean reversion was completed. Elsewhere in the Asian region, the Chinese market remains a laggard. It's one of the worst performing markets this year. The Chinese had instituted one of the biggest stimulus packages, particularly relative to its GDP, and they're tightening up now. I posted I will be posting a news article today talking about the impressive profits at the Chinese banks, but that it has already been and gone in terms of the valuations, and they are going to have to come to the market for a significant amount of cash to shore up their balance sheets because of the vast amounts that they lent out in the last 18 months, the 2 years. They're not going to be able to lend that much for the foreseeable future, and the government is coming down rather hard on the property sector, so that is certainly weighing on the stock market. And one of the things that has been holding up the stock market over the last 6 and 7 months has been the increase of supply. Well, with the four main bank shares alone looking for 480 billion yuan. And the yuan is what about 10 yuan to the pound at the moment, so we're talking about £48 billion. It's probably not very large in the scale of things when we consider that the Greek bailout could be in the region of over 100 billion euros, but it's probably enough that it'll take some time for the Chinese market to work through that additional inventory. Elsewhere in Asia, Indonesia hit a new high today and remains within a very consistent and indeed persistent advance, although becoming increasingly overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. The Korean market has been going sideways for much of the last 3 months, but is pressuring the upper side of its range. And we continue to see that the Asian region is among the leaders, both in terms of absolute performance and in terms of the timing of their advances. Indonesia, in particular, has been one of the better performing markets this year. And there are a number of fuller money themes are manifested in the Indonesian market, both the supply and elasticity means rising demand commodity theme, as well as the rise of the consumer. And of course, Indonesia is one of the largest population centers in the world, and with improving governance, it is quite rightly attracting an increased level of investor attention. In the US, the earnings continue to come out really very positive, and the same can be said of Europe. So it's certainly not a time to be writing off the performance of the corporate sector. And the Goldman issue continues to rattle on and is having a knock-on effect on the banking sector generally. However, when one looks at something like the regional banks in the USA, they have probably paused in the short term and are a little bit overextended relative to the 200-day moving average, but they remain recovery candidates. And that is a broad positive, because the regional banks are probably more reflective of the wider economy anyway. They were never that involved in the CDOs and various credit derivatives that some of the bigger banks were. And the fact that they remain recovery candidates is probably a broad positive for the US economy generally. The US is benefiting at the moment from the relative attraction or safety of its markets compared to the question marks that hang over Europe. However, with the weakness of the euro, that is bolstering the consolidated earnings of Europe's major exporters, and most especially in Germany. The German market was a little bit weaker this week, but remains above this 6,000 level, and consolidating here really quite steadily. And it remains one of the better performers. And there is very much a north to south divide in Europe at the moment, with some of the more northerly countries doing quite a bit better. So Denmark has held on to the vast majority of its gains and is really advancing quite spectacularly. And Sweden has also one of the better performing markets. When we look at Latin America, the Brazilian index has been going pretty much nowhere for much of the last 3 months. It's held in this sort of broad range between 60 and 70,000, and is finishing out this week in the region of 67,850. This is a rather large consolidation, and I would feel really very uncomfortable if I were to see Brazil falling below the 60,000 level, because broadening following such an advance raises question marks about the consistency of the move. We can rationalize it by virtue of the fact that the 70,000 and maybe a couple of thousand points plus is in the region of the previous high, and it's a lengthier consolidation before it moves on to new additional highs. But it continues to range at the moment, and that suggests that supply and demand have come back into balance for the medium term. It really does need to push back above the 70,000 level, but Brazil has an awful lot going for it and remains a long term remains in a secular bull market, because just like Indonesia, it has probably better than Indonesia in many respects, because it has turned into a creditor nation. It has the growing consumer culture, as well as being a globally significant producer of just about every commodity. A credit crisis in Greece has concentrated the minds of investors on some rather large problems that are only really beginning to gain attention right now. And chief among those is the massive amount of debt that sovereigns have taken on, the nationalizing of private sector debt that has gone on since the credit crisis. And sovereign balance sheets are under pressure in here. And investors are now beginning to ask quite valid questions as to the ability of sovereigns to pay back their debts. The Greek problem has brought that question to the fore. And Europe's imperfect currency union is in the firing line. That also highlights the relative performance of the emerging markets and commodity-related economies, which have been fuller money favorites for a long number of years. So they remain some of the higher growth areas. They have the budget surpluses, often have trade surpluses, and they're the big population centers of the world. They are dominating the demand growth for consumer goods. So the greatest urbanization in history remains the dominant secular theme for the global economy for the foreseeable future. And there remain a number of different ways to benefit from that, but one of them is to invest directly in the countries where growth is coming through most easily. The other obvious way would be to invest in companies that sell things to these countries that they need to either satisfy the needs and wants of the emerging consumer base or to sell them what they need to bolster their infrastructure development. This week was a difficult week for some of the mining companies, but they were all relatively overextended compared to their moving averages. They have all, I don't think that there are any of them have broken their progressions of higher reaction lows or pulled back below their 200-day moving averages. Xstrata, in particular, got hit hard in here today, but continues to have this progression of higher reaction lows. And provided they remain intact, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. If those progressions of higher reaction lows are taken out, then that will ask some bigger questions about the broad consistency of those chart patterns, because particularly in shares such as Rio or particularly BHP Billiton, the BHP in particular hasn't been particularly consistent over the last few years. It has been capable of some enormous moves to the upside and indeed to the downside. And the main consistency characteristic has been the progression of higher reaction lows. And when they have been taken out, it has generally indicated that investors have taken fright at the commodity bull market theme, and the share has been capable of rather large declines. So the progressions of higher reaction lows really are worth keeping an eye on. But longer term, the commodity bull market remains very much intact. I suspect that one of the things that is motivating investors at the moment is that the slowdown in Chinese property development that people are anticipating following the tightening measures that have been put in place could lead to less demand for industrial resources. However, that's likely to be, if that does turn out to be the case, it's likely to be a medium-term event rather than a long-term event, because the Chinese are only attempting to tighten their economy and to prevent overheating. They're not about to stop developing their infrastructure or building houses for the millions of additional people, or build homes, because most people are living in flats, but build homes for the people that continue to move into the cities. And that is a long-term theme, and not just in China, but in countries such as India, where you have a vast rural population, and there's a sound correlation between economic growth and urbanization, which is really only getting started in a country like India. When we look at the problems that are in the sovereign sector and the yields that are available on on gilts or on treasuries in particular, they appear to be rather low relative to the type of risk that someone is taking on when buying those investments. And with the problems that are facing the Eurozone and the borrowing requirement that is outstanding for some of these other sovereigns, gold is now attracting increased attention as a hedge against the dilution of fiat currencies that has been part and parcel of just about every government's solution to to the credit crisis. And gold finished out the week in the region of $1,180. It's successfully pulling away from this 1150 area, which it had been having difficulty in for much of April, and it looks set to push on to test the at least test the December highs. The gold market is there have been a number of questions, and I attempted to answer the hedging question in yesterday's comment of the day. But there have been questions about how best to hedge a cash position. And for a sterling investor, moving into something like the Australian dollar, the New Zealand dollar, or the Canadian dollar, well, the pound has already had a very large move against some of those currencies. So one would be coming in on a momentum play with hope that the trend will continue. But gold is breaking out against some of these weaker currencies. The US dollar is probably a middling currency at this point, and so is gold, but gold has been breaking upwards against the euro and against the pound, and has been firming against a number of other currencies. And that's a broad positive, and speaks of the continued infallibility of the current of the gold of gold as a real measure of value. And the pressures that the Greek crisis and increasingly the questions being asked about the single currency generally are a broad positive for the gold price, and it remains the least overextended of the potential hedges or safe havens that people could go for. So the chart action certainly suggests that investors are starting to get back into the gold price, and that's a broad positive both for the other precious metals, but more particularly I think for some of the gold shares, because while the S&P is down in the region of 1.1% in here today, I'm just pulling up the Amex Gold Bugs index, and it's stronger by just over 1%, and is pushing up from this 450 area, and has a pattern really quite similar to the gold price. Some of the mid-tier gold shares, such as IAM Gold or Eldorado Gold, are pushing upwards to either test their highs or breaking upwards to new high ground. And that is showing that some of these smaller companies have much more leverage to the gold price. And as soon as gold does start to firm up, that these have had relatively shallow reactions and are firming really quite favorably. So there are certainly investment opportunities out there. broadly speaking, there is the world of difference between some of the currencies, such as the dollar, the euro, the yen, the Swiss franc, and the pound, and compared to some of the better performing currencies in some of the better performing economies. And we're very much in a two-tier world now, where the growth in just about every facet of the economy tends to be focused on some of these emerging markets and commodity-related currencies and countries, and the debt problems and the aftermath of the credit bubble that has affected the USA and Europe remains very much a medium-term theme. And it could hold back those economies for a considerable period. And we've continued to see that it's the export sectors in those countries. And those countries have some of the biggest, most well-known company and brand images in the world, and a large number of companies that are leveraged to growth in the global economy, and they're going to continue to outperform in this type of environment. So, particularly, this could even be more particularly the case, I think, because they have the there is little inflation, inflationary pressures outside of commodity prices in some of these low growth economies, and that means that they'll be able to contain their wage costs and potentially increase their margins in their export markets, and that's a broad positive. Also, they have the added benefit of the relative weakness of their domestic currencies relative to their export markets. The euro in particular has been a tailwind for European exporters over the last few months, and the USA has had a similar benefit over the last year or so, as has the British pound. So exporters remain a medium to longer term theme for some of these low growth economies. So there are quite a number of different ways to invest in this long-term theme of the greatest urbanization in history. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.